You're listening to Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Now with Robert Brennan, and this evening we mourn the passing of Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. We will miss him. He was a freedom fighter and a physician and a scientist and much more. He died after at least a four-year battle with terminal cancer at the tender age of 49, so it can happen to any of us, so get your life out now. Now, my very special guest and lady of the hour is a TNT regular, Elizabeth Hart. Elizabeth Hart is a philosopher by training, and she's a long-term critic of the pharmaceutical industry, beginning with the vaccines for pets industry back in the 2000s. And, of course, having been so sensitized, she was ready to see all the, how shall I say, the foibles of the pharmaceutical industry in this pandemic/scamdemic, call it what you will. So good evening, Elizabeth.
Hello there, Robert. How are you?
All the better for having you back on again.
Oh, that's so nice of you.
So I thought this evening, before we discussed your latest letter, and by way of introduction, Elizabeth is also, I describe her as a prolific letter writer, which isn't just about, well, writing angry letters to people in power. It's, of course, in creating a historical record where they cannot claim they were not told, they were not advised, they were not warned, when we gave them falsifiable warnings of their, well, the follies of their actions. So there's a power in that, both potentially legally and so that, you know, we might be able to change things. So, yeah, so just wanted to talk to you first up about the latest headlines from news.com.au. Top doctor signals return of masks as COVID cases surge. We're referring to John Gerard, the chief health officer of Queensland. So he's talking about saying that there is, I can say, quote, nationally, there's increasing pressure. There is a school of thought that we should be mandating masks again, he told 4BC on Friday, close quote. So, yeah, he's talking about bringing back masks. He's saying, this is very interesting. There's a high, this is not a quote, this is part of the article. The high prevalence of immune-resistant COVID variants is now causing particular concerns with health leaders. There's no defining of what they mean by immune resistance here, with there also being a high prevalence of those who are fully vaccinated. Presumably, we're talking about vaccine-resistant, immune-escaping vaccine-resistant strains, that referring, I imagine, to BA5 and BA4 of Omicron. What else do we have in this article? He says there's a current wave of COVID cases affecting his state, that's Queensland, would get significantly worse in the coming weeks. What else have we got? We always knew that winter would be bad, but this variant is particularly nasty. And infection, this is quote, infection with this virus will be very common. You will know a lot of people infected with the strain of the virus in the coming weeks, close quote. And so essentially he's saying that he still has the power to lock us down, mask us up. It ain't over yet. And I would argue that that's contrary to the experiences of people in their everyday life. So what do you think of that, Elizabeth?
We've got the same thing happening in South Australia. We've got somebody here in Uni of SA, Adrian Esterman. They wheel him out regularly, beating up the fear. And he's desperate to get us masked up again and wants restrictions in place. So it's obviously, it's part of the marketing campaign because they want more people jabbed. Mm-hmm. So it's all about beating up this campaign to get people jabbed, as far as I can see.
Mm. And it's an interesting study in social psychology, because I was telling Malcolm Roberts last night, I walked down the Brisbane Mall, maybe 5% or less of people are wearing masks.
If people aren't wearing masks, yeah, they're going to forget about COVID, aren't they?
Well, that's right.
So they've got to keep that COVID, those masks in our faces, so that we can't forget about it.
That's right.
So that's what they're desperate to do this. They just want to keep this going on. This has been going on for 2.5 years now, Robert.
Mm-hmm. It has
this
been.
This is a very long time.
Yes, yeah. That's right. The hardest part about 2 weeks to flatten the curve is the first, 26 months, 27 months?
Well, yeah. With a colleague, Emma MacArthur, she's been looking back at pandemics and pandemic planning and what have you. And it's very interesting to look back at this history.
Mm-hmm.
I've been looking at some figures today. Let's take, for example, the 1957-1958 pandemic, mm-hmm. flu pandemic. And I think we can make COVID the same as the flu because, I mean, it's not a problem for most
it's
people.
It's an upper respiratory viral pathogen.
Yeah. So let's make mm-hmm. some comparisons. So 1957-1958. And there were estimated as well, mind you, by the CDC, 1.1 million deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is not a lot of deaths. And also in 1968, there was a pandemic, the Hong Kong pandemic. That was another million deaths.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're finding with this COVID, this has been going on for 2.5 years. 6.3 million deaths have been attributed to COVID in the past 2.5 years. That's in a world of 7.9 billion people. Where about 60 million people are expected to die in a year.
Yes, and I might add that in 1968, which isn't that far back, the population was less than half what it is now. We're on the exponential swing of an up curve, you know.
Yeah.
And that is maybe starting to level off at some point in time in the future, they say. But that's right. So, and that's a lower end estimate that you've given. So let's say a million and a half is a lower end estimate, or 2 million. We're talking about the equivalent of 4 million in today's terms, and yet they didn't lock down. Yeah.
No, that's right. And so 6.3 million deaths. What is going on? Why have we got vaccines? Why have we got vaccine mm-hmm. contracts?
Mm-hmm.
This shouldn't be happening. We should not be going forward with this. Mm-hmm. This is not justifiable.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
When they did Event 201, which was this sort of simulation of the industry response to a pandemic, they mm-hmm. predicted about 65 million deaths over 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, 2.5 years with 6.3 million deaths. And we're not putting that down to lockdown or anything that's affecting that. This is, as we can see from the previous pandemics in 1957, 1958, 1968, there was about a million deaths. But mm-hmm. when Ferguson did his modeling report predicting how grim it was all going to be, he used 1918. And compared mm-hmm. it to that as if it was going to be as bad as that, and with 50 million deaths.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time he's coming out with that report, in England, they were also bringing down COVID as it wasn't a high consequence infectious disease. It had low mortality. So there's a conflict there, isn't there?
There is. And harking back to 1918, the population was, of course, much lower still, and the death toll has been estimated at something like 50 million. Now, if we had 7.9 billion people back in 1918, there would have been in excess of 220 million deaths. And there was no lockdowns. There were a couple of places in the world, like Gunnison, I think, in Colorado, and there was a little military base, a naval military base island off the coast of California, where, you know, transportation wasn't then what it is now, and so they got wind of it, and so they were essentially shut up shop early anyway, so they just maintained their state of isolation and they avoided it. But you've got to, you know, but that's not an argument in favor of lockdown, because the moment you discover the virus is out and about across the world, it's too late. It's already everywhere.
Really an argument against what we need, a review of what has gone on, because none of this should have happened.
Yes.
And with them now talking about these contracts, you know, as Mark Butler saying that Jane Holton was going to be looking at these contracts going forward. I mean, she is the worst possible person to be looking at this, as she's in the job of selling vaccines.
Ah, well, yes, we'll get to her. But you mentioned Event 201. So tell us what you know about Event 201.
Well, Event 201 mm-hmm. was a simulation that was held in October 2019,
mm-hmm.
Simulating a coronavirus outbreak, surprise,
mm-hmm.
And it was in pigs in Brazil.
Yep.
And they did the simulation to sort of practice what would we do if this happened. And I've watched that, I guess you have too, mm-hmm. and it's very much an industry response of what they will do, what we put in place. But it's also about how they're going to handle the public. Jane Holton was there. She was at the simulation. And I think she was one of the people who was saying what would happen was they would flood the media with their messages.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also argued that they would shut down people who threatened what they were saying. So the anti-vaxxers would be shut down. And this is what's come to pass. that anybody who's questioned the response to the pandemic is being demonized and shut down. We've got doctors, all sorts are being shut down on Twitter and YouTube. We've got the most incredible situation happening. The liberal democracy is disappearing before our eyes, where this whole industry response is all about shutting everybody up and making them accept the vaccine. Everything was about the vaccine. Nothing else mattered. They didn't. Did you, as your doctor yourself, do you remember any messages coming out about try and live a healthy life, eat well, exercise?
Oh, no, not at all. No, and yes, including there was nothing about, for example, the low vitamin D plasma levels in Northern Italians. Nothing about that.
That's right. It was all about creating fear. It's like every single thing they did was about making this worse.
Yes.
You know, beating up the fear, financial worries, people losing their homes. Mm-hmm. And if they didn't take the jabs, they would lose their jobs, lose their homes. Every single thing has been made to make people, their health worse. It's not been a positive response to something, to a respiratory virus. And no, it's all it's been about is getting those needles into arms. That's all they care about. And they want those needles in everybody's arms, regardless of risk. Now we're seeing the pressure for babies, 6 months and up. How can that be happening? Anybody knows that the babies weren't at risk, and yet it's being approved by the FDA. Looks like it'll be approved by the TGA. How can it be happening?
Yes, and so with John Gerard warning us that he might bring back in a mask mandate in Queensland, he includes that the comments that, make sure everybody's up to date with their vaccinations, especially those over 65 and who are eligible for a fourth dose. Now, interestingly, they're not referring to the fourth dose as the second booster. Why? Because they're using the rhetoric that close to 93% of Queenslanders were considered up to date with their vaccinations. And that's mirroring Fauci, where he's saying, no, we must dispense with this, you know, numbering the vaccinations. There is no end point. You can't be fully vaccinated. You can just be up to date, whether that means 2, 3, 4, 10, whatever. Yeah.
But we've got to look back at this, Robert.
Yeah.
When this started first happening, people were told two doses. That's what it was, 95% effective, blah, blah, blah. This was the magic bullet that was going to happen, two doses. And then it sort of came out that, oh, it might not be two doses, it'll be an extra dose. But let's look at, it was announced in July 2021 by the Morrison government that they had secured 280 million doses.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of doses for a population of 26 million people.
That is
280 million. Yes. So that means in July 2021, remember that the rollout was had only been happening for a few months, and all of this thing would have been planned and coordinated. They were already planning then that they were going to be jabbing people over and over again.
Yes.
But people weren't informed about this. People weren't informed about there was going to be multiple jabs. This is a massive scandal.
Yes,
because
that's right.
People have been stitched up for this. They've deliberately put out leaky vaccines into the community, vaccines that don't prevent, you know, transmission, infection and transmission. They're not vaccines. They're some sort of jabs. At first, we were told these Pfizer jabs were going to need all sorts of refrigeration and all special. Don't know what's happened about that, because they seem to be, you know, just on tap, don't they? So it's something very odd about all of this, that we need to go back and do retrospective analysis now of what's gone on, because it is not making sense. That they told people first it was two jabs, but they were really lining up an industry here. Mm. They were making an industry. This is a manufactured crisis.
Yes, and, we can think about a different business model where a piece of computer equipment has to have an operating system and it has to be upgraded from time to time. So it's essentially a subscription business model. It's vulnerable to viruses, which there has to be upgrade patches. And what happens if we start to imagine the object of our business model as not being a computer, but rather the human body? Now we have...
Well, funny you should say that, Robert, that you should make this, allude to the computer model and the software model, because funnily enough, it seems like it's a computer software billionaire, Bill Gates, who's running... international vaccination policy and has been for the last 20 years.
Yep.
And this is very odd. You know, if people tried to say this in 2020, people would roll their eyes and, oh, you know, you are conspiracy theorists. And yet it's an actual fact. Bill Gates has been running policy for 20 odd years. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is practically running the World Health Organization. It's set up the Gavi Alliance, it's tied up with CEPI. They've seemed to have everybody in their pocket in the science and medical establishment. And we have to ask the question, how has a computer software billionaire been allowed to dominate this area? Mm-hmm. We're finding out that because he's got the money, he directs where the investment goes. And he wants vaccines out there. And so everybody's getting vaccines pushed upon them. He put out in April 2020, Gates notes, he was laying it out then. He was laying it all out. Everybody in the world will have to be jabbed. He had it lined up for the children and everything. And this is exactly what's come to pass. He had Boris Johnson at his beck and call. Macron, he's been lazing with all these people. He has been calling the shots, literally,
mm-hmm.
without yes. accounting.
Yes, he's embedded in all places, and as Astrid Struckelberger will say, that he's essentially like a nation all his own, with a kind of diplomatic immunity when he hits Switzerland to talk with the Davos crowd and the WHO. Yeah,
and he came here in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
I had a look at he was on Q&A, ABC Q&A, and had a look at the transcript recently. And because this is going way back, we've got to look back at all of this, but what's been going on in the past years. You know, things like the no jab, no pay, for example, that got put in place in 2016. It was coercive vaccination for children. That was lobbied for by the Murdoch media.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Morrison was the social services minister at the time. And that got, it was politicians across the board supported that. But now we have this no jab concept being used for COVID. And it was Jane Holton who actually called for no jab, no play for adults in May 2020 when she spoke at the National Press Club. So she had the ear of Scott Morrison. She was on that COVID commission. And then she, the person who's pushing these jabs, she calls for the no jab, no play. She's calling for coercive vaccination for people. And that has what has come to pass.
Mm-hmm.
What a great situation for her that she's pushing the jabs. And she manages to maneuver it to be put in place that these are going to be mandated. That seems to be what's happened, because now we've got all these people who've been mandated to have these jabs, that bodily autonomy, bodily integrity has been destroyed in this country, that people have been made to have these jabs. It is the biggest crime ever.
Mm. Yes, it is. And returning to Gates, the guy that we couldn't discuss in 2020 without people rolling their eyes, and many of them will roll their eyes still, but he was starting to get on the nose in the turn of the century as a rapacious capitalist, monopolist, et cetera, et cetera. But then he made the switch, and suddenly he reinvented himself as this wonderful philanthropist. Now, I used to know people in the evangelist community and in that kind of Christian community where they would give to the church. And I would see many a time, let's call it miracles would fall in their lap. They'd get some money come their way that bolstered their faith. And that's wonderful, But how could this guy give away so much money and yet he's profited staggeringly from it?
He's getting richer, isn't he?
He gets richer and richer by giving it away. Yeah. But of course, it's the purchasing of influence. It's the purchasing of, the building of tentacles within the corridors of power across the whole world. And
he's developing, he's involved with the testing. I think he's invested in testing with George Soros, I think. We have to demand transparency now for what this guy mm-hmm. is invested in or his organizations are invested in. Because again, looking back at those previous pandemics, the difference is this time we've got testing. Mm-hmm. So we've got all this testing going on, creating this, manufacturing this crisis for the testing. And the other thing that we've got is jabs on a massive scale. And now so many people have had these jabs, this medical intervention, fast-tracked experimental medical intervention that we don't know what the outcome is going to be. We're in a totally different world now that so many people have been given these jabs who didn't need them. And we don't know what these jabs are going to be doing to them in the long term, if it's making them more vulnerable to respiratory diseases, because they're immunocompromised when they have the jabs. They're getting repeated jabs. You know, what is this stuff that's being injected into them? You know, they've had the same jab over and over again. They haven't been changing the recipe or whatever. Mm. There's so many. When you stop and look back at this, you just question, I don't understand how this has been able to happen. You know, if you go back to December 2020, at that time, I wrote to Anders Tegnell because I was challenging him because Sweden had been successful with its approach, you know, its minimal approach. And I was questioning why things were starting to be beaten up in Sweden, you know, that the king and the prime minister were sort of carrying on as if it was getting more serious. And of course, what was happening is that we were getting to the start of the jab rollout. And so Sweden really had to be pulled back in. We couldn't have Sweden there as a control group without any jabs, could we? So it looked like that was being beaten up. But I wrote to him in December 2020, and I noted in that email that at that time, 1.6 million deaths have been attributed to COVID. So that is a very, very low figure and in no way justifies what has come, you know, come out afterwards is a massive global vaccine campaign.
That's right. That's right.
It doesn't add up.
That's right. Yes.
You could ask, what was the process? There was no process. It seems like they practiced with Event 201 in October. Mm. They've come out with some virus that kills old people. Wow, isn't that amazing? It doesn't kill young people, it kills old people. Mm-hmm. And they use this as an excuse to wheel out these products and to also wheel out their plans for digital ID, which have been in the works for a long time. In Europe, they've been planning this vaccine passport for a long time, and it's like they simply wanted an excuse to get this out there, and they've used this virus as the excuse. But when we look at it now, I'm sorry, this virus does not justify what they've done for the past 2.5 years. You think of what they've done in Australia, the amount of people who were quarantined, who were fined and punished and made to feel like they were evil people for wanting to go out of their houses. The whole creation of this crisis, and it's all been made up. You know, there may be people like we have the, you know, respiratory diseases all the time, but they've just simply blown this up. We can see with the figures. It's 6.3 million deaths in 2.5 years. I'm sorry. It's just not adding up. Somebody's got to blow this out of the water and call them out on it.
No, that's right. And so, you know, we're in a sense, we're sort of bookending this interview with the very first one I had when we talked about conspiracy with a Dr. Jerry, a retired general practitioner. And one of the points I wanted to make there was that, you know, we all believe that conspiracy theory exists, in fact, in the world. But when we talk about it in terms of, let's say, statecraft espionage of the Soviet era or of the Cold War on both sides, but, you know, or even maybe the CCP today, or we talk about it in terms of the machinations of Bin Laden in the days before 9/11. But there's a flavor of it's always back then or over there. It can't be our rapacious capitalists. It can't be our leaders of our quote unquote democracy, our managerial elites. And so, in a sense, it's kind of a xenophobic exercise. It's always them. It's always a point in history. It can't be ours. Unless we are to say, well, it does happen in our world. There are those who are defrauding Social Security. The working class who might be running a childcare centre scam or something like that. But that's the common folk once again. So it's a common folk, or it's those back then or over there, but not our managerial elites. It's a demonising of those who would critique those in power in our world and displace the reality of conspiracy everywhere else, which is just beggars belief. But they're very accomplished in it.
Yeah, well, we can blow this up because we're in $1 trillion debt now.
Yeah.
And this has been under the Morrison, the Liberal government, which is supposed to be, the Liberal was supposed to be freedom, small government, not squandering money. Mm-hmm. Well, that's been trashed, hasn't it? So there we are up to it. Who has made all this money over the last 2.5 years? so much of the money has gone and it's been wasted.
Mm-hmm.
We had to call for accountability on this. Well, how can they just spend money like that without consulting the public? These governments are out of control now.
Mm-hmm.
They are not being accountable to us. We are voting people in, but they are not acting in our best interests. This is what we're finding out. These people are supposed to be our representatives, but they're not representing us. You try writing to them and getting accountability. That's not happening.
No.
The government seem to have been taken over. We know that Klaus Schwab has boasted about the fact that the governments have been taken over. We had Greg Hunt here. He was with the World Economic Forum.
Strategy director. We know the smart people because he retired before the election. So, you know.
And the rumour is he's gone to the WHO, but I haven't been able to verify that yet. But that'd be interesting to know, you know. So this is what we've got, that these governments have been taken over. We had these elections. I don't think they were legitimate because we weren't properly informed. I write letters. I write lots of letters. We're not getting the information back. These people are becoming our dictators. And when people have to wake up and fight back on this, there's 26 million people in this country. You see the tone when these people come in, you know, the new Labour government, the way they speak as if just what they're going to do and this is what's going to happen. They're speaking like kings and they're not being responsive to us. They're not consulting us.
Yes, it's an interesting idea that a proper functioning democracy is not just the act of voting and vote counting, and so we can say, well, the more popular vote won. But that voting is informed by information. And if that information has been censored, then to what extent has it been a fair election? And on that note, we're just going to have a quick ad break. This is TNT.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Are there calls in Europe for a climate emergency to be declared similar to the way the COVID emergency health declaration are that would give sort of extraordinary powers to the executive branch? There we have senators, we have a whole House coalition, a caucus pushing hard for a national climate emergency declaration, which if you think about it, you know, the International Energy Agency's laid out the template just this year and last year that mayors, governors, I'm sure heads of states in Europe would have the ability to ban cars on certain days. They'd have the ability to, you know, essentially control thermostats, turn them down, cut off power. They have it all planned out. The question is, how big of a movement is that in Europe to sort of follow that exact pattern?
Well, in Britain, it was the Extinction Rebellion group that called for the climate emergency. Interestingly, Parliament called a climate emergency, but the government didn't.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
So many of your favorite libertarian celebrities are here at Freedom Fest. You not only get to hear them speak, you get to talk to them because our speakers are part of the action.
Freedom Fest is an amazing opportunity for freedom lovers from all over the world to meet and interact, strategize, and come up with ways to advance our principles both in the culture and within the political space.
Don't miss Freedom Fest, the largest liberty event of the year, July 13th to 16th at the Mirage in Las Vegas. For more information, go to freedomfest.com.
Government faked a pandemic. Government faked a test. Government faked a cure. Government must be held accountable. There's nothing fake about us. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
This is now Dr. Robert Brennan, my very special guest, Elizabeth Hart. So just to get sort of systematic and properly sort of chew each bowl of porridge, we have the orthodox canon of let's say, this thing that is SARS-CoV-2 and COVID-19, this pandemic, that would say that sometime late 2019, early 2020, the virus jumped species from pangolin, bat, maybe both, you know, the wet market story, and into humans in Wuhan, and then it's all on for young and old, but not really, only old, well, mostly old. But then we look at some remarkable coincidences. We look at, for example, in October 2019, there was Event 201. Okay, they were talking about the species being pigs, that the location of outbreak being Brazil, but it's a coronavirus. It's hosted by, we've got Johns Hopkins, which is part of the School of Public Health, which is attached to the Bloomberg Group. We've got the Rockefeller Foundation. We've got all of the different acronym soup that comes under Gates, including, you know, we've got Gavi, which is his vaccine alliance. We've got ID 2020, which was founded in 2016, which aspires to give a digital ID to everyone on the planet. And we've got it happening in the United States, in New York, and at a time where, well, what else was happening in October 2019? Well, Wuhan, of all places, had the World Military Games. So there was a couple of hundred military athletes, quote-unquote athletes, from many different countries, and who knows who was with them and doing what at the time. And we have, of all the places where they were doing gain-of-function research, where they were actually doctoring up coronaviruses with the very properties that this one has, was at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, in the very same self-same place it was said to just cross the species in a wet market. So there's a lot of coincidences there. According, of course, if we are looking at any potential T loss, the fact that the people who we're calling into question are the very ones who profit from it. So it gets to a point where, you know, the credibility of the mainstream story gets stretched too thin.
Well, maybe it's all a big story. I think we've got to look back at these pandemics. I'm very suspicious of this whole story now. As I said, I'm working with my friend Emma MacArthur. We're looking back at this, and we're just seeing the creation of a pandemic industry. Mm-hmm. And I think we've really got to look at this. You know, look at 2009. That was swine flu.
Mm-hmm.
284,000 deaths were attributed to that. That is a very small number. You know, so, and I mentioned the other ones, you know, the million deaths for the 1957 and 1968. These did not justify what has been created in response, which is this pandemic industry.
Yes.
It's looking like this is an industry that's being built out of thin air.
Yes.
And it's like time we sort of started looking at this. Because that, I think this is obviously a money-making racket, as far as I'm concerned. And if somebody sat down and worked out how much this COVID response has cost, it's mind-boggling to think about what has been done. And I think it's been totally wrong. Mm. It should never have happened. And when you think about the damage it's done in people's lives, the relationships it's broken, they've caused division in the community with the people jabbed, they've created a catastrophe out for nothing. And it really, wow, when you just sit there and think about it, it really, seriously, this is what I think. This has all been created for nothing. A massive, somebody's got to sit down and work this out. And when you think about the whole thing of what has done for all of the industries in the world that have been affected, the constraints on people, I just don't think you could put a price on it. And it's all being unjustified.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned earlier the current estimates on the numbers of deaths in the 26, 27 months or thereabouts up till now as being, you know, what is it, 6, 7, 8 million. But, you know, we've got to return to that old chestnut, which is how many have died of COVID or with COVID? And I would assume that maybe 1 million, 2 million, who knows how many
people. We don't know.
But it'd be certainly less than whatever number they've given us. And it's in the excess mortality of various countries that we get our clue as to what that might be. So we mentioned Sweden, who didn't lock down. And they had the same per capita mortality as in 2012, 2013, when there was no pandemic. There was perhaps a couple of thousand in a population of about, what is it, 8 or 9 million in Sweden, there would
about
have been
10.
Yeah, 10 million. There would have been 2,000 or 3,000 excess deaths, perhaps, in the aged, in their very sort of concentrated large care homes. But it's a case against lockdown, and many European countries. You look at the Euromomo data. Okay, there was a big first wave death spike in France, in Spain, in parts of Germany, but many countries where the virus did rip through, there just wasn't anything.
But it was orchestrated. You know, we had, what was it, World Emitters? That was all set up. these numbers coming in. When you think about that, you know, how was that coordinated? Beating up the cases. Remember, it's all these cases. Because they didn't have deaths, they had to beat up all these case numbers. And what was the definition of the case? It was orchestrated. It was created. It was beaten up. The media was captured. It was fear, fear, fear. But when we look back on this, it isn't adding up. And as I say, with the deaths, 6.3 million deaths, and we're suspecting that that number isn't actually accurate. That it was a lot less than that. But I mean, an article came out just recently. It was published in the Lancet Infectious Diseases, which is trying to say that these vaccines have saved 20 million lives. This is another model. And this is the authors of this are, where are they? Imperial College. Yes. They're actually, a couple of the authors are actually in the same group as Neil Ferguson.
So
they're coming out with this stuff now to try and justify what they've done. And guess who it's funded by? Garvey.
Gates Front. Yes. So, yeah.
It's laughable. How are they getting away with this? It's got to blow up, this stuff, because it's all there right in front of us. It's a matter of how we're going to get people to believe this, because they're so entrenched in all the fear mongering. But we have to tell them it's all been a lie.
Yes,
it's all been a beat up.
Yeah. That's right. And this is the Lancet who sort of helped launch the Coalition for Epidemic Preparation and Innovation, which is a Gates Front, back in early 2017, and that was after CEPI sort of introduced itself to the Davos crowd, and in between which the FDA changes its policy to grease the wheel of emergency use authorization for any future vaccines, so as to allow the wealth transfer from taxpayers to you know who's. So, you know, once again, a series of coincidences that stretch the current narrative beyond all credibility. Yeah.
When the whole system is set up for this, here the TGA is funded by industry, gets most of its money, I think, from industry. It's massive conflict of interest. And we've seen how the TGA is behind pushing these products relentlessly. The system the system was never good, but in the past we had the Pharmaceutical Benefits Advisory Committee, and they were the final arbiter on whether a vaccine product went onto the taxpayer-funded schedule. So the TGA would approve it, then Atagi would look at it and recommend it, and I don't think there's a vaccine that they haven't recommended. And then the PBAC in final analysis would say whether it should go on the schedule. Now, they're pretty bad as well, but here's a good example to look at. They actually rejected the meningococcal B vaccine for the general schedule. They've rejected it, I think, about four times now. Why was it rejected? Because it didn't provide herd immunity. Now, you think about another jab that doesn't provide herd immunity, and yet it's bypassed the PBAC process. See what's happened this time? They have bypassed the PBAC process. That didn't happen. They had this new committee. The chair of the PBAC, Andrew Wilson, was on this new committee with a whole lot of other people, with the CSIRO CEO, Brendan Murphy, Paul Kelly, Alan Cheng, who's a major figure who's just about on every committee. We've got to examine these people and look at their conflicts of interest and look at this network. And it's not just about COVID. This has been in place for years.
Yes, that's
right. We've got to look at the whole schedule.
And so we have our new federal health minister, Mark Butler, who is a career union and Labor man. He's described even as part of the Labor left faction, so the left of the left. He's a former minister for social inclusion, environment, climate change. He's a lawyer in international relations graduate, so he's got he sees himself as part of the within the global context. And he's such a man of, a paragon of discernment that do the investigation into the proper purchasing or improper purchasing of the previous government the vaccine for SARS-CoV-2. He appoints Jane Halton. And Jane Halton, whose brother-in-law is Victorian Chief Health Officer Brett Sutton.
Has that been verified? I've heard that a few times. I'm intrigued about that. Is that actually...
Well, you know, I got that from a reliable source, and so I should do my own checking, but it's a very reliable source. But anyway, I might be wrong on that, but whether right or wrong on that, I am right that she's been a CEPI chair, the Gates Group. She's linked to the Gates Foundation. She's linked to WHO. She's been part of the World Economic Forum. She's, needless to say, the Australian, the National COVID-19 Commission Task Force. She was appointed in March 2020 for that. She was the Event 201 participant. And she's also the director, previous or current, of groups such as the ANZ Bank, Crown Resorts. Now, Crown Resorts are interesting because they provided themselves as one of the detention centres down in Victoria. So wheels within wheels within wheels. So you'd imagine if there was any possible a priori conflict of interest, that she would be it. But yet she's the one who's nominated by our new federal health minister.
And that's Mark. I mean, how useless. Yeah. How useless is Mark Butler and Anthony Albanese? Yeah. Throughout that pandemic, did we get any opposition from these people? Mm-hmm. Did they hold the government to account? No, they just went along with the whole thing. It's like they're run by the same puppet masters. You know, it was useless. They were absolutely useless. We've got the same thing we've got Albert Malinauskas here in South Australia now. And they've just taken on board it's just about pushing the vaccines. No scrutiny. These governments, it's a major problem here. Mm-hmm. They're not working for the people. What are we going to do about this?
Yes.
And as you can imagine, Mark Butler, we're talking about this, I'm sort of dreaming up quite a sort of full-on letter for him. How he can be even thinking about having Jane Holton look at this. How could they even think of such a thing? It's just ridiculous. Everybody's going to pull this apart.
Yes. Yes, and having done away with the monarchy in favour of this democracy, she's a daughter of a Whitlam senior staffer. She's a psychologist by degree and, of course, a career bureaucrat. So she can assimilate and know how to work, nudge theory, or we should call it shove theory now. And to those who think, well, yes, but it's Labor, well, she's been held very high positions uninterrupted by whatever government is in office for a very long time. It doesn't matter whether it's Labor or Liberal. There is the shadow government who holds the real power, of which she is part. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very concerning. She's crossed so many things, isn't she?
Yeah.
So they're controlling all of this. You know, but it's a global network. We've got to look at this. There's a global network. Think about Julie Gillard, for example, former Prime Minister. She's the chair of Wellcome, which is a major group impacting on vaccination as well. We've got to look at this globally. In the past, I've mentioned to you how I look at the UK as being at the heart of this COVID response with the AstraZeneca vaccine, and Andrew Pollard, who's the chair of JCVI over there, the same as Targi. There's a massive network, and it has to be investigated and exposed. Because there's a lot of things at stake here. This is big, and we know that we're all at risk of being enslaved in this system that they're planning. You know, making us have these medical interventions all the time, having us under surveillance. We've got to look at the impact of Microsoft in the surveillance and companies like Accenture. Mm-hmm. Andrew Chalmers, who's just been the Labor candidate in Parramatta, just become MP in Parramatta. He was connected with Accenture, which is involved with the digital ID. So we're seeing our governments being infiltrated and the people are at risk. We're at risk of being controlled and with so many more medical interventions. This situation now with the jabs being given every few months. Why there is not more pushback from people at having these interventions all the time? Surely it's got to start now as we've been heading towards four. And for goodness sake, the children... This is going to be so horrendous what they're doing to the children by giving them these things which they don't need. How that can be approved? How could a Targi approve that? And how could the doctors' organisations?
All the risk-benefit calculus in kids is all on the side of risk.
Well, you know, I've written to the chair or the president of the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. Mm-hmm. She just will not. She just doesn't respond. Mm-hmm. They just treat the community with contempt.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. They, all of these bodies need to be swept away and new ones put in place. The doctors with integrity are going to have to rise up and say, we can't have this going on. You know, I'm hearing of doctors who are bullying people into having the jabs.
I'll tell you an example. I've heard several examples of this kind. There's someone who is young, and by young I mean, you know, up until and including sort of late middle age. They're healthy. They have had COVID and they weathered COVID just fine. And now they will tell their employer, well, it doesn't stop transmission. But their employer will say, yes, but to continue on this company, you will have to have the jab. Why? Because we're very worried about you. We're very worried that you will get it and be sick. And they'll say, but we've already had it. And yet it just doesn't compute. The indoctrination is so very strong that, you know, who knows what will break it.
But these companies, they are really putting themselves at risk with this. I mean, I've had the things with like my golf club that they insisted that everybody had to be jabbed. These organisations taking it on themselves to interfere in people's personal health decisions because they were led by what the government was doing though, because the state governments were mandating these jabs. And in South Australia, so much fear was whipped up when they opened the border. People were absolutely terrified when the borders opened and the vaccinated people came in. And funnily enough, when they came in, that's when it started to spread. And they've whipped that up here. And now what are we going to do about that? Because that's entrenched in people's minds. Even though they can see that people aren't all dying in the streets and what have you, they've bought into this. How do we break this down now? And how do we stop the companies interfering in people's personal health decisions?
Yes, that's right. And going back to my earlier point, I can walk through the Brisbane Mall and see that very few people wear masks. But if they called the mask mandate tomorrow, it'd flip instantly to 95%+. And so,
but do you think there might be more pushback this time? You think people have had
I don't know.
Two and a half years.
I think that Orwell nailed it with doublethink. You know, there'd be people where they'd you know, there's something in their behaviour. The fact that they're out in the first place, the fact that they're not wearing a mask, they know on some level that there isn't a super dangerous virus about that's going to put their life at risk. And yet, if you were to ask them the next day why are they wearing it, a good deal of them would say, well, now there's a dangerous virus about, my life is at risk. Some of them would just say, well, you know, they're doing it to get along, they're doing it to follow orders, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's cold comfort to the rest of us who depend upon a growing populace who will be dissidents in order to ever win this thing.
But why are they so scared? Because of the media and because of, like, this CHO in Queensland and Adrian Esterman here, because these people keep pumping out this information and we've got no media investigating and really telling people the true story. That is the major problem. You know, here the local newspaper is The Advertiser, which is run by the Murdoch Media, and as I've said to you many times before, they're conflicted because News Corp Australia is involved in this vaccine research with the Murdoch Children's Research Institute, so they've got a vested interest in beating this up themselves. But people who read this Advertiser locally, they're just getting these dramatic stories in the paper all the time, and that's what they're believing. And the same thing on the television, you know, like Channel 7 and what have you, keep putting out the same story as well. We haven't got a fourth estate that's investigating. And again, it's going to come out. I mean, the story's bound to break internationally, I suppose. But once it comes out, how are people going to deal with this and then finding out that they've been lied to? The last two years.
Will it come out? Because, I mean, we would hope it would, but, you know,
I think
there's a cyclical model of history as a philosophy. You'd appreciate that. But what happens when we get a state of cooperation between the globalists that is so strong because they all have, you know, how shall I say, convergent opportunistic interests that don't challenge one another on the basics of the control of their people, and we have the technology, we might actually see the end of history. They might pull it off.
Well, I suppose I just keep ploughing away doing what I'm doing. You know, you might as well think positively rather than negatively. Yeah. You just feel that you've just got to keep doing, trying to do the right thing and trying to get the news out there. Because we know what's going on is wrong. Mm-hmm. It's blatantly wrong, and it's becoming, it's really evident now. And I said, even today when I was just looking at those figures, when I just looked at those figures for those other pandemics, and I thought, what? How are they getting away with this? Mm. I can't understand how they have got, this is, you know, that mass formation. Whoa.
Yes, I don't actually, yes, it's a very interesting formulation, but the problem with any, one of the main problems with any a construct of social psychology, mass psychology is A, that if you have a mass psychopathology and you reflect it back down on the individual, then it's an abdication of personal responsibility. I mean, imagine if we were talking about the Nazis and they, let's go to Godwin's law. You know, we're now talking about the Nazis. And we would say, oh, well, but you can't blame them. They were the victims of a mass psychosis. Well, actually, I wouldn't let them off the hook so easily. The other problem is that, of course, you can't have a mass psychopathology because you can't have a mass psychology because you can't have a mass mind. That's just a collection of individuals. And so once again, we're back to the individual. But Desmet, Matthias Desmet's formulation is very interesting, and it's a great act of poetry on our times, yeah.
But you think, you know, people, they think they're living in a liberal democracy. This is the thing, people have been blindsided by this. Now, for whatever reason, you were suspicious. I was suspicious at the beginning because I've just been investigating vaccination policy for years. So straight away, I was suspicious. But for people who weren't suspicious, when this first started, it was like something out of a Contagion movie. It seemed really serious. They'd been prepped for it by these movies. And everybody was ready to believe this. They were all frightened.
Yes.
You know, so they were taken in by this. So why should they think that their government is trying to trick them? Why should they think their government is a threat? These people aren't going to think that way.
Yes.
So they've got to find out now that they have been tricked by the government, and it's going to be a very hard thing to understand why
Contagion,
this is happening.
I'm so very pleased you brought that up. It's a wonderful, like, we could extend our conspiratorial ideas to say that the movie itself was an act of propaganda, deliberate propaganda, as, what do they call it, predictive programming. That, but
I think it was. But putting, CDC was the consultant on the movie.
Well, that's right, and I'm sympathetic to that. But it's also a study in elite psychology, because, and I advise every listener to watch it, because it paints the epidemiologists, the virologists, the managerial elite, the scientist class as almost literal saints. You know, there's even the motifs of martyrdom. It's just wonderfully acted. But the one dissident character who most closely maps onto us, you and I, is not painted as somebody just wrong, but they're painted as a scoundrel. You know. So unlike the, they're not just misunderstood or misunderstanding, they are the sinner against the saint. And so, yes, that's the ultimate victory of Contagion.
And that's what they've done with this. You know, people who wouldn't comply, they wanted to cancel those people out of society.
2011, yes. The other thing masterfully in that movie is it, and spoiler alert, but it because it also talks about it, I'm describing a final scene here, it paints the reason for the pandemic as humans' encroachment upon nature, and that marries itself to, you know, to the climate change agenda, da 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 da, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, very, very interesting. Yeah. And so in the closing couple of minutes, if you could give us a minute about Rupert Murdoch, and he's entangled.
Yes. Oh, my favourite.
Yeah.
Well, I wish we could really blow that one up, the Murdoch media's influence on this, because it is so major. Mm-hmm. When you've got the press running the narrative, and that they've got an obvious conflict of interest in that no jab concept came out of the Murdoch media. I mean, it might have been set up by somebody else, but they certainly use it as a campaign. And that News Corp Australia is involved with vaccine research. through the Murdoch Children's Research Institute, which was set up by his mother, Dame Elizabeth Murdoch. Mm-hmm. It's their right to be exposed, but of course we've got no media to do that.
Rupert, you can't take it with you, so just live a good life now. It's not about the money. Elizabeth, but he's also single, ladies, now, I think, now. Anyway,
oh, that's right. Yeah. Good-o, let's all queue up.
Now, this has been my very special guest once again, Elizabeth Hart. This has been TNT. Many thanks to you all. Good night.
Thanks, Robert.
Bye-bye.